broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm your host tonight, Matt Aaron, and I bid you good morning, good evening, wherever you may be in this universe. Our guest tonight, we're going to cover a lot of ground here. Ralph Blumenthal is our guest tonight. He's a distinguished lecturer at the University of New York and is also an award-winning reporter for the New York Times from 1964 to 2009. He's also co-written several books on crime and culture history. He co-authored the recent groundbreaking Times articles on the secret Pentagon program to investigate UFOs. He's got a new book out. I'm going to put it up on radiodisclosure.com so you can go find it and get it. It's on the Harvard medical student / psychologist, John Emack. Yeah, this is incredible stuff. And I'm going to tell you right now, this whole thing of John Mack, the more that I read the book, the more that I studied. Oh my gosh. The name of the book is Believer. Again, it's on radiodisclosure.com. Go up there. You can go snag it from radiodisclosure.com or you can get it from Amazon. Ralph, welcome to the program. Where do you want to start on this?
Interesting story. I was the New York Times correspondent in Texas in 2004. And I happened to pick up a used book called Passport to the Cosmos, intriguing title, about UFOs and aliens. I read it, was very interested, and I saw that the author was a Harvard psychiatrist. And that made it, of course, more interesting. What was a Harvard psychiatrist doing writing about aliens? And, he had a lot of people he was treating or researching. He was a psychiatrist, so he had a lot of patients. He had a lot of people coming to him for help. And some of these people had the most amazing accounts of interactions with aliens being taken aboard their spacecraft and subjected to all kinds of reproductive experiments to breed a hybrid race. I mean, amazing stuff. And he didn't say he believed it all, but he was certainly intrigued and interested, and he gave it some credibility. So I thought I would give him a call sometime and interview him. I had no idea how famous he already was. I was kind of naive. And the next thing I know, I picked up the paper, and he was dead. He'd been run over in London. He was there for a conference, drunk driver. He was looking the wrong way. It happens in England. And so I couldn't interview him, but I was still intrigued, and I talked to his family, and I got the right eventually to look over all his material and his archives, and that became the book.
So this guy, like you compared to him, I'm still fascinated by everything that you're involved in. I'm in awe that I'm actually talking to you. I'll just have to say that out loud at this point.
Nice to hear.
This is no joke. I mean, this guy is a Harvard professor, correct?
Correct.
And he's studying these phenomenons of UFOs, alien abductions, past lives, all these things.
Right.
To me, most people get all weirded out, even when you start talking about that, you know, in a professional sense. Do you address any of that in the book of people that looked at him in that strange way? I guess that would be the question. I mean, do you address any of that?
Oh, yeah, all of it. I mean, look, he knew what he was getting into. He was a very smart guy. He had won a Pulitzer Prize writing about Lawrence of Arabia. He was a very esteemed member of the Harvard faculty. He was no dummy. He knew exactly what he was getting into. He had written some important books on psychiatry and nightmares and, you know, childhood trauma. So he knew what he was doing. But he was also very courageous. And he knew he would be laughed at, which he was. He knew he would probably end up the subject of a Harvard inquiry, which he was. People made fun of him, but people also listened to him because of his, you know, credentials. So it was a very unlikely match of subject and person. But that's what really caught my interest. You know, it wasn't my regular thing either. As you said, Matt, I was writing about the mafia and Nazis and crime, corruption. That was my beat at the New York Times. So I got into this pretty much like John Mack did, not my regular thing, but I was intrigued.
So the biggest thing is, to me, anybody who gets into this subject, that gets into this like I have, you go in, there's only one way to enter a swimming pool, and that's at the deep end, especially if it's cold. There's only one way to enter that swimming pool, and that's to dump right into the deep end and get right into this sucker and just get it all over you. I mean, the water, the cold, everything, all at once. So what was his dive point? Do you know what that was, where he took the dive?
You know, that's a good point you make. He didn't actually ease into it, as you point out. He did plunge in, and it happened this way. He had been doing a lot of social activism. He had protested nuclear weapons. He had tried to make peace in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians. He had a lot of very earthbound causes, social causes. And then he got involved in some experimental work on breath work. By breathing exercises, you could transform your consciousness and take you back to your childhood. It was like almost like taking LSD, which he also was doing, actually, but not when he was doing the breathing exercises. So he started becoming aware that, you could enter alternate states of consciousness, that there was some kind of spiritual world out there that conflicted with everyday reality. So he was kind of primed for it. Then he goes out to Esalen, the think tank on the Pacific Ocean in California, where people are doing all kinds of interesting psychic, Olympics. I call it psychic Olympics. And he meets another psychiatrist who tells him about a guy in New York who has been, investigating people with stories of interacting with aliens. And he shrugs it off and says, no, that's crazy. I don't want to hear about that. He had the reaction we all have, probably, that it sounds totally nuts. But he finds himself in New York, and he does call this guy, who's an artist named Bud Hopkins. And Bud Hopkins shows him these letters he's gotten, because he's written some books on aliens already. And John Mack is transfixed. I mean, who are these people writing letters about their experiences? They sound so real. So that's how he plunges in. He begins to collect his own group of these people. He calls them experiencers, because if you call them abductees, it's already prefigures what they're saying. So you take a more neutral term. They had an experience. They're experiencers. And he interviews them, and that's got him started.
Oh my gosh. That's the plunge right there. When we come back from the break, I want to know how his views have changed over time. And the book right now is available on Amazon, folks. If you go up there, what's the best way to search for it?
Just put in The Believer, my name, Ralph Blumenthal. It's available on Amazon. It's Barnes & Noble. All the bookstores have it. If they don't have it, they'll order it. There's a Kindle version, so if you don't want to wait, if you're so excited, you got to read it right away. You can get it instantly on your iPad or your cell phone, your laptop. So many ways to get it.
Well, I want to know about how his views have changed over time as he began to do more research. There's something about the numbers when you really start crunching them. and you have more than one story to go after. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Ralph Blumenthal probably said it wrong again.
No, it was right.
Yeah, see? I'm trying. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about John Mack. And this subject keeps getting stranger and stranger as we continue on down the line. And we were discussing the fact that he has done so much research, or let me rephrase that, did so much research. And he's got a lot of this in his book, and it's up on Amazon. It's called The Believer. You need to get up there, find it. I'll put a link on radiodisclosure.com. But the biggest question I have is when you get a frequency, and I'm talking math here, and my nerdness is popping out a little bit. You get a frequency of these things, and you start putting little dots in, and you start figuring out what these things are, and the commonality, again, the frequency of these things, either the hoaxes, the non-hoaxes, all that. What did he come up with?
Good question. So he's you know, coming to this cold, as you pointed out. He was not predisposed to believing in this, but when he got the stories from these people who he interviewed himself, he was dumbfounded. And here's what they told him. They told him they were either asleep at home or riding in their car, or in one case, out in a snowmobile. And by the way, these are people from all walks of life, not just, you know, one kind of person, or all kinds of people, all ages, men and women, even little children. And suddenly they became aware of little beings surrounding them. The beings would take them out of their surroundings, out of their car or wherever they were, and beam them into a spaceship very often, and then give them a series of pseudo-medical tests, sometimes taking eggs from the women, taking sperm from the men, and sometimes they'd be re-abducted later and they would see their hybrid children. So these are the stories these people were telling. And very often they told them as they were in extreme emotional distress. So Mack, who's a trained psychiatrist, recognized this. He said, these people are not faking, whatever else is going on. And he said, they're not insane because I know insanity. That's my field. And, you know, they're not making it up. They're not crazy. So what are they? And basically, he came up with a very controversial conclusion, which is that this really happened to them in some reality. I mean, on some level, this is real. And that's what he got kind of in trouble with, because people said, well, how could it be real? I mean, it can't be real. But he said, look, I've eliminated all the other possibilities. And he did find some evidence that we can talk about, Matt. Wasn't conclusive evidence. But anyway, he came away with that conclusion, and that's what was so controversial.
There was somebody I interviewed quite a while back, and they told this story, and I don't know if you cover this in the book or how legitimate this is, but there's multiple stories of these women that had no history of sex whatsoever. Right. Marriage, boyfriends, nothing, even their age. They became pregnant.
Right.
They went to the doctor. The doctor said, you're pregnant. And I couldn't imagine, you know, I have a daughter, and, you know, I couldn't imagine somebody telling me that she's pregnant. And then all of a sudden,
you don't want to hear that. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the pregnancy disappears. No abortion, nothing. And
right.
And
yeah, that I do cover that. I mean, that is one of the common experiences that these people tell. Girls, as you say, who said, look, I couldn't be pregnant because I didn't have sex, or my husband had his tubes tied, or not to, had a vasectomy, so he couldn't be the father. So Many cases like this, women said, and yet I felt pregnant. I went to the doctor. Yes, he verified I was pregnant. And then they have some kind of an abduction experience and the pregnancy disappears and it's, you know, removed on the spaceship and whatever. The problem with that is because while many women told similar stories, there has not been any cases of doctors verifying scientifically that, A, yes, they were pregnant, B, they suddenly were not pregnant, and there's no evidence of a baby. The baby was somehow taken away. So that part of the puzzle is missing. So all you have is the anecdotal accounts of the women who felt that they were pregnant. Maybe they were seen to be pregnant, but what happened next is not scientifically proven.
See, to me, that has to be... That has to be one of the scariest parts about all of these stories is sitting there thinking about the fact that, yeah, and then the mother who, yeah, the mother who said, yeah, I'm pregnant, I'm going to deal with this, I'm going to, I mean, I can't even imagine the emotion that comes with that.
Right. And, you know, later some of these women said they were, you know, re-abducted and shown their children, their child or children, and they looked like a, you know, a mixture, a hybrid of humans and the aliens. And, you know, the pictures of the aliens, the pictures have been, you know, drawn everywhere, the pear-shaped heads, the pointy chin, the huge eyes, the short. You know, so the figures of the aliens, these are not photographs, by the way. Nobody has a photograph, unlike UFOs, where there are some pictures and Navy images, etc. There are no verified pictures of aliens. So that is one big problem. But we have the descriptions of people, and they all, you know, generally they coincide.
Again, this is a Harvard University. This isn't. Yeah, you got to step back for a second. You got to say, Harvard. We're not talking about podunk, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. This is Harvard. Sorry, it's just.
Yeah, well, and that did come to haunt him. But I got to tell you, Matt, when you say Harvard, yes, you know, we look up to Harvard as the, you know, the number one citadel of higher education in America, you know, academic pinnacle, et cetera, which it is, oldest university in America. But 100 years before John Mack, the great psychologist William James was doing experiments with psychic phenomena, their seances and all kinds of stuff. And Harvard accepted that. I mean, he's considered today one of the pioneers of psychology. So Harvard has a history of doing, you know, controversial research. So you say, well, why did they get all in a snit over John Mack? And we can talk about that. But, you know, Harvard was no stranger to, you know, strange research. And by the way, remember Alpert and Leary developed, you know, started experimenting with LSD. They were Harvard professors. They got in trouble, but they were propounding LSD right there at Harvard. So there's a history.
So I'm looking at some of your notes here, and I think it's Buddy Hopkins. Is that correct?
Bud Hopkins.
So what role did he play, and who is this guy?
Okay. He's very interesting. He plays a very important role in the story. He's the artist I mentioned earlier. Here's his story. In the 1960s, he was an artist on Cape Cod, a very good artist, by the way. He was written up in the New York Times. And he was riding with some friends on his way to a party, and they see a UFO over the ocean, and they're all watching it. And they get to the party and they say, hey, guess what? This is amazing. We just saw a UFO. And people at the party go, oh, yeah, we saw a UFO. We've seen UFOs. Oh, yeah, everybody's seen you. So guys, what the hell's going on? Everybody sees UFOs. So he starts to look into it and he reads up. And sure enough, there's a lot of stories of UFOs. And then he hears of a very strange case. The liquor store owner in his neighborhood tells him that he saw a UFO and followed it. It followed him home to New Jersey. And he saw little men get out and dig holes in the soil and take soil samples. And so Bud Hopkins writes this case up, and suddenly he becomes a big expert in aliens and UFOs. And this is way before John Mack. So he writes a book about it called Missing Time, where he says that very often the people who have had these experiences, you know, they see a UFO and then they get home 2 hours late and they don't know what happened in the meantime. They've lost track of time. And under hypnosis, usually, these people then remember, oh, I had an alien experience. I had an abduction experience in those missing 2 hours. So he wrote this book and he became a celebrity himself on UFOs and, you know, alien abduction. So when John Mack got this introduction to him in 1990 and he goes to see him, that's what introduced John Mack to the whole subject. But Bud Hopkins was first. Now, they had a little falling out along the way after that because they had different takes on this whole thing, which is a kind of a different subject we can talk about. But that's where Bud Hopkins fits in.
It's so the more that I sit back and I listen to so many different experts such as yourself, the more I see a common theme is this isn't something new. This continues. There's a lot of people who believe that many aliens are in the Bible. That was written, some of that, over 5,000 years ago. We come back. I'm going to ask him some questions about some of these articles he was writing in the New York Times about the UFOs and the Pentagon. That's a dangerous subject to write on. We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron. If you want to call us, 1-833-880-9899. 1-833-880-9899. Our guest tonight, written for the New York Times for... How many years was that?
Only 45.
Yeah, that's longer than I've been alive. So, you were writing some articles, and again... You have a new book out. I'm going to get to this first. You have a new book out called The Believer, and it's about John Mack. The information that's in it is absolutely phenomenal. I'm going to put a link on radiodisclosure.com, but if you go up and you search his name, Ralph Blumenthal, I hope I said that right again, go up to Amazon. It's on Amazon. Go up there, grab it. There's even a Kindle version. If you're impatient and you want it now, you can go grab it. But from what I can tell at this point, from the snippets that I have looked at so far, it is a phenomenal book. Now, you've been writing about UFOs in the Pentagon. And you were writing this in a major news article. My first question to you is, were you ever threatened?
Only by my wife. No, just kidding. No, I was not threatened. And by the way, John Mack, this is important. He said that in all his research, he was never approached by the government. No men in black threatened him, to shut him up or anything like that. So, other people may have encountered, efforts by the government, but not him. And neither did I. So, no, that was not part of... our story at all.
That's good to know. Now, I have talked to some people that have said that they have definitely been threatened, have met, but it depends upon, I guess, certain subjects, certain things that you get into that they get all weirded out about. Bigfoot's one of those. They, Everyone that is a true Bigfoot researcher, there's something strange about Bigfoot. They don't want you close to it, and I don't know why. And everyone that I know that's a true Bigfoot researcher that has gotten into Bigfoot has landed into it by accident, not on purpose. And that seems to be the case. Even like you're looking at John Mack's story, that seems to be the case. But tell me about some of these articles that you were writing about in 2017, or did you start in 2017?
Started. The first one was 2017. Okay, so it had nothing to do with the book, actually. The book I'd been working on since John Mack was run over in London in 2004. But in 2017, a colleague of mine, Leslie Kane, who had written a book on UFOs, who's a brilliant investigative journalist and writer, got a tip and went down to Washington and met with a group of people, including a Pentagon official who had been heading an office that no one knew about called ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. In the Pentagon, that was monitoring UFOs and contact UFO encounters with Navy pilots. And they were monitoring this since 2007. They had gotten $22 million from Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, to do this research, but it was not public at all. Nobody knew about it. Officially, the government was out of the UFO business since 1969. It had been, you know, Project Blue Book was one of its, official programs, but that ended supposedly. But we now know the government was always interested in UFOs and remains interested. Anyway, Leslie came back and said this guy was heading this program, but he's quitting because he's not getting enough support from the government. So that was a pretty amazing story, and we had it all on the record. We had his letter of resignation. We had, you know, statements from other people, and we broke the story in December 2017, the front page of the New York Times, that there was a secret Pentagon office monitoring UFOs. So that was, a big deal. And suddenly everybody woke up to this research. And we also published on the Times website videos, Navy videos of some of these objects that were recorded on infrared, imaging systems and photographs and, actual statements by the pilots themselves who saw these things with their own eyes. And so that was the beginning. We did a number of other stories since then. But it started off, it started a big interest in the government's programs, and now there's going to be an official report coming in a few months, we think.
So what's interesting to me is I'm looking at the history of John Mack, and I'm looking at the history of the stuff you were writing, along with our culture today. And what I don't think a lot of people realize is, for some of the people that I've worked for in the past, I mean, we fly private, I've flown in military aircraft, and I've talked to some of these, military pilots, Air Force pilots, and private pilots, and so on and so forth. And the subject of UFOs always comes up because I'm always fascinated because a pilot is such a unique spot in the sky. And it has been so taboo to talk about this until as of recent, what is it, less than 3 years ago, if you talk, and tell me if I'm wrong, in less than 3 years ago.
No, you're absolutely right.
If you were a commercial pilot and you said, I saw something weird in the sky.
Right. That's how he'd say it, too.
you would probably be grounded at that point.
That's right. They told the airline companies would tell pilots, do not report UFOs. You'll lose your license. Just about 2 weeks ago, a American Airlines pilot saw something fly over his plane over New Mexico, and this was caught on. This was captured. The radio transmission was saved. He said, it called down to ground control, and he said, "You guys shooting off missiles down there because something big just flew over our plane." No missiles here. Well, they saw this huge white thing fly over the plane. And that was an American Airlines pilot saying this. And, nowadays it's okay for pilots to report this. And, the paradigm has changed. The Navy pilots report it all the time. The Navy says it's welcoming these reports. They want to study these reports. So it's different now.
So to me, I see this parallel between John Mack in this, and I think you have been like right in the epicenter, or like the center. I probably used the word wrong there, or probably just made up a word because I tend to do that.
Epicenter is good. Epicenter is good.
Yeah, you've been at this to the point to where you've been able to see this phenomenon, this, all of this. And what else has been interesting to me, and I'm looking at your notes here, and it all just kind of comes together, is the interest that a lot of these crafts have in the anti-nuclear campaign, some of the history with that. Do you see the same parallels with that I do?
Yeah, there have been a number of incidents recorded actually in a book of UFOs flying over missile sites out west and disabling the missiles. And this led to a lot of consternation, as you can imagine, because this is our primary defense, our missile system. And suddenly they're knocked out. So there does seem to be some connection between UFO visits and missiles. And John Mack, this gets to a point we were sort of making earlier, that since this was sending a special message to humans to take better care of the planet, to avoid nuclear war, to turn away from destruction. And he thought there was a positive aspect to all this, that they were sending a message of reinforcement. And Bud Hopkins and other researchers were saying, oh, no, the aliens are evil and they want to take our DNA and they're just traumatizing people. So John Mack came to see some positive aspect in all this and others not, but anyway, that would tie into these reports that the UFOs were trying to disarm nuclear missiles.
Well, I would think that it's highly unlikely that an advanced race who has the ability of interstellar travel is going to come this far. I could see him coming for genetic material. I could see that. But I don't think there's anything on our planet that's probably, including our fossil fuels that you always see in the movies. I don't really see that as much of an interest as a lot of people want to make it out to be. When we come back from the break, I want to ask the question, did you find yourself becoming more of a skeptic or more of a believer throughout all this? We'll be back. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Alien abductions, aliens disabling nuclear silos, them collecting DNA. That's the subjects tonight. John Mack, my guest, Ralph Bloomingfield. I'm terrible with names, but that's okay. How do you say your last name? Please tell me.
Blumenthal.
See, I'm terrible with last names. And I am a dumb Polak for the people that don't know. You have a book out that you've written on John Mack. And the book is on Amazon right now. It's called The Believer. And I'm going to put it right on radiodisclosure.com's website. And folks, I'm going to tell you right now, go up there and get it. We're going to hit it again before the end of the show. But the question that I pose to you in all of this research, writing for the New York Times, you've won, did I see in my notes that you won a, what award did you win?
Well, I was on a team with other reporters that won a Pulitzer Prize for the paper. The first time the World Trade Center was bombed by a truck bomb, well, before the 9/11, we did a big investigation of that, and that won the paper a Pulitzer Prize.
So you're an award-winning writer, award-winning reporter. You have, you fell into the whole UFO phenomenon, alien abduction, all this, I would say, almost by accident. Am I correct in that?
Yep.
Did you find yourself becoming more of a believer or a less believer the more you got into this?
Boy, that's a good question. I'll tell you this, that I have found rather sadly that a lot of the people who are in this field talking about it and who, you know, present themselves as skeptics or debunkers have not done the research. And if you're going to get into this field on one side or the other, you've got to do a lot of research, because a lot of stuff has been written about it. And I'm not talking about, you know, fantasy novels and speculation. I'm talking about real research. There was a, I start off my book, The Believer, with the story of this conference at MIT, of all places, in 1992, that examined alien abduction from every possible standpoint. They had atomic physicists there, they had psychiatrists, they had folklorists, they had religious scholars, theologians. Everybody was trying to figure out what the hell this thing was, because no one could make any sense of it. So a lot of serious research has gone into this. They met for a week. They put out a very thick book with all the transcripts of the conference. So, you know, this is not an area for dilettantes to go in and, you know, read one, you know, novel or so and say, I'm an expert in this. This is serious stuff. It's the biggest, it is the number one mystery in the universe, along with what happens after death. Okay. That's it. Those are the two big questions. Are we alone? And what happens after death? So if you're going to go into this field, you got to do a lot of research. Well, I did a lot of research for my book. And I got to tell you, I don't know the answer. At least I know enough to tell you that. I don't know the answer. And the people who have come to me and said, oh, this is simply a question of these people are insane, or this is sleep apnea. You know, they have these dreams and they think it's real, or it's nightmares. It's not true. It's not as simple as that. It's very complicated. And there is no explanation to this point. All we know what it isn't. It's not insanity. It's not delusions. It's not hoaxes or fabrications. There have been hoaxes and fabrications, but all the stories can't be dismissed that way. So it's a very, very complicated business. So this is a long roundabout way of answering your question. Am I a believer? Well, I don't buy it whole. I don't, you know, say it's absolutely real, because you walk around the streets, you don't see people getting abducted. Clearly, whatever's happening is not happening in everyday reality for everyone to see. On the other hand, these stories are so compelling, and there's so much reason to believe these people, because they recount the experiences with such appropriate affect. And there's so much documentation, and there's in some cases witness corroboration, to, limited, and other things that, you know, bits and pieces of evidence. So, you know, that's the answer. I'm informed better than I ever was before. I still don't have an answer, but I won't describe myself as saying I certainly haven't dismissed this as nonsense. And I won't say it's absolutely true in everyday reality. So it's something in between.
Good friend of ours, Linda Moulton Howe. She, we were talking about cows, and, you know, I love the meme. You know, this is interstellar travel. They come for a cow. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
But when you start and you sit back for a second and you look at the things that they're doing, precision cutting, like these are, and she describes it, she's taken pictures of it, she's I mean, the research that Linda has done in these experiences is phenomenal. Like, you cannot discount the evidence,
right?
Whether or not,
absolutely, yeah.
Whether or not, if these people are, some of them are, and again, seeking attention, not seeking attention, whatever. There's too many true stories. There's too many factual things, and I take it in this book, from what I have looked so far, there's a lot of that in there. And if you're interested in it, you got to go get it. That's the bottom line. Like, if this is your cup of tea and you're sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for what's next, go get the book, because it's only going to take you to the next level. This whole thing of alien abductions and all of this, when I was young, my dad, you know, took us outside and we got these big old things. We called them redneck lights, and we would point them to the sky and we would flash them in the sky, and then we would have things flash back at us. Mm-hmm. And no one has still yet today been able to describe this, and we can reproduce this even today. It is one of the strangest phenomenons that I've experienced. And after you go through something like that and you see it, and then you start to believe, there's no getting around it. It's right. Out of all the phenomenon that you've written about, what do you feel is either the strangest or most interesting that you would put your proverbial feather in your hat with?
Well, you know, first of all, there's what we call a core abduction narrative. That seems to be the basic story that most people who have reported these experiences, and that includes little children, by the way, who say, you know, little man takes me up into the sky, I fly in the sky. These are kids who have not read books about UFOs. They haven't seen movies. You know, they haven't absorbed the cultural history of UFOs. They're just telling what, you know, some experience that apparently was real to them. So anyway, there's a core abduction narrative of little beings that take people up to a ship for some kind of, you know, medical procedures, etc. But there's so much else that does not fit. That is more strange than you could ever imagine. And the more you read these stories, they don't fit. There's a general pattern to them, but there's also a lot of stuff that doesn't fit. So, for example, among the very strange stories are these implants that people feel that they were abducted, that aliens implanted a BB in their brain or their ear so that they could be tracked afterwards. And sometimes these implants fall out, or people get them, you know, they go to a doctor and they get them removed. And there's no clear proof that these things are alien, whatever they are. Sometimes they're found to be natural body tissue. There's a lot of mystery about these things. No one, as far as I know, there's no conclusive evidence that now we have an implant and it is some material never seen on Earth. And, you know, proof positive. So that's one of the very strange stories. I tell a lot of strange stories in this book, and often they end up with no answers.
So what is the legacy of John Mack? How should he be remembered?
I remember him really as a hero because he bucked the establishment. He subjected himself to a lot of ridicule. He found something that he didn't understand. He followed the investigative steps to understand it. He made mistakes. He was human. He had too much of an eye for women other than his wife, which he knew he had a problem with that. He was a little too enthusiastic. He admitted that to Harvard, that he should have been a little, you know, kept his distance a little more. He was naive when he talked to the media. He would ask them, you know, should I talk about astrology? Oh, no, maybe I shouldn't. I mean, you don't ask a reporter, should you talk about astrology? But he was, you know, he was very outgoing and friendly, and he wanted to, he had, you know, no secrets with the media. So, see, he had flaws. But basically, I see him as a hero, the best of the human species, who, you know, went on a journey, tried to find the truth, had many adventures and misadventures, and came back with a story for the boon of humanity.
Well, again, the book is on Amazon. It's called The Believer. We're going to put it on radiodisclosure.com. And I thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to probably have you back on with some other subject material soon. You're one of the most fascinating people that I finally got. I finally got you. I am so honored to have you on the air with us tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show, Matt. Thank you. You're a good questioner.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to say thank you for listening tonight. We'd like to say thank you to WTWW, the International Shortwave Station, for carrying us, and all of our other affiliates. You got something you want to disclose to us, 1-833-880-9899, 1-833-880-9899. This has been Radio Disclosure.